A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
It's more like Boris Karloff.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I'm right here on Talk Radio. So, Christmas has come and gone, and we are now free to barrel headlong into the new year. But before we set out our stall for 2020, we should probably just recap a few things that happened since we last spoke. Who can forget Boxing Day, or should we say Foxing Day, when the Romaniac barrister Julian Moron thought it might be a great idea to murder an innocent fox in his garden with a baseball bat. The man who spent most of this year trying to stop Brexit by taking the government to court then thought it would be another great idea to tweet about his seemingly random and needless act of violence performed while he was wearing his wife's kimono. Since then, the RSPCA has launched an investigation and our legal eagle Morm has gone very quiet indeed. As I said earlier to James Max, why didn't he just bore the fox to death with one of his diatribes about Brexit on Twitter? You know, those threads that he does, 1,000 words, 2,000 words, 3,000 words. Meanwhile, the Labour Party is still trying to find a leader and failing dismally. The latest name to enter the fray is Rebecca Long-Bailey, but judging by her job application in The Guardian today, calling for progressive patriotism, whatever that is, she's not learned much from the election defeat. Biggest election defeat, of course, of the Labour Party since 1935, in case anyone's forgotten about that. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, Andre Walker joins the Independent Republic today with his take on the big stories of the year. Plus, we'll be discussing Tony Blair looking for EU money while campaigning to remain, and the latest from the world of ethical veganism. Apparently, vegans are now worried that they may be the subject of veganophobia or something like that. But of course, most of all, we do want to hear from you because we are the voice of the people here at Talk Radio, and you may not have had as many chances to have your say since I haven't been here. So by all means, take advantage of it now. 0344 499 1000. We're kicking off this morning with a school race row. Two of this country's leading private schools have refused to accept over £1 million in scholarship funds from a wealthy philanthropist because they fear they might be breaching anti-discrimination laws. Guess why? Yep, that's right. Because the money was to be earmarked for poor white boys. Unbelievable, isn't it? You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station in the world. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, there are many, many stories to talk about on the way to 1 o'clock today when Jamie East is going to be filling in for Matthew Wright. It's going to be a fantastic show this morning. I want to hear from lots of you about what you did over Christmas. I went to Scotland, many of you will know, up to Trump Turnberry, believe it or not, which was in magnificent form. Some people were worried that when Donald Trump bought Turnberry, he might ruin it. He's actually augmented it, made it better. The golf course was magnificent. The hotel was amazing. The villas were fantastic. It was a beautiful outlook on the Ayrshire coast there in Scotland. And in fact, it didn't even rain apart from on one day. So I have to say, it was a magnificent little Christmas. I hope you had a good one as well. Do call us and let us know your favourite stories of the Christmas period. Do feel free to talk about the fox beating case. Do feel free to talk about the Labour Party. Do feel free as well to talk about the BBC, because we're going to be finding out why something like three quarters of people in this country now think the BBC licence fee should be abolished. You know the number, 0344 499 1,000. We're going to kick things off this morning, though, by talking to our good friend Roger Layton, Chief Executive of Partnership Learning, an academy trust that runs over 9 schools. He is himself a former head teacher. An extraordinary story this morning about how one particular philanthropist wants to leave in his will enough money, several million possibly, to actually be used as scholarship funds to take poor white kids through the private school system. But guess what? The 2 schools in question where the money was due to go have basically snubbed the gift, saying that they're worried that they might be in breach of anti-discrimination laws. Dulwich College, Winchester College, turned down an offer from Professor Sir Brian Thwaites, who's basically 96 years of age. Let's talk to Roger and find out what he makes of it. Well, Roger, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
And greetings of the season to you. I hope you had a good Christmas and all of that. This is an extraordinary state of affairs, isn't it? Because under normal circumstances, if you leave money to a seat of learning, they are usually welcoming it with open arms, aren't they?
They will. I mean, this is an extraordinarily difficult, sensitive area, isn't it? Which are the most important characteristics that need maybe help, you know, that make people disadvantaged. Is it race? Is it class? Is it gender? Is it the fact you had a single parent upbringing or a two parent family? I think you're into a whole minefield here. Where do you draw the line? Where do you stop dealing with the individual and treat them as a mass of characteristics? Very tricky one.
Well, apparently you draw the line at the poor white kids, because this is the first time, as far as I know, that anybody's ever turned down free money to educate some people.
Yeah, I suppose the potential problem here... Well, I can see a load of problems. How do you define white, for a start?
Well, no, now but don't you... If you start doing that, you're looking for a problem, aren't you? Surely, if you go to white communities in this country where there are lots of poor white kids, and I think there's plenty of analysis that's been done which says that working-class white boys are currently the most underprivileged in terms of, you know, positive discrimination, in terms of, you know, money that comes from local councils, in terms of all sorts of things. They are very unbalanced in the sense that they are not treated equally.
I'm not sure it's that they're not being treated equally. It's true that they are not performing as well as other groups in society. That is absolutely true. But I've been in this business of education for 40 years, and I've always thought from way back that class is the most important determinant rather than race. That it's whether you have the benefits of, you know, a home full of books and parents who are aspirational and the sorts of things that tend not only to go along with middle-class backgrounds but come more naturally from middle-class backgrounds. You can still have that in a working-class, low-income background, but you're more likely to have it in a middle-class background. And right from the beginning, I've seen that, you know, you can have kids from ethnic minorities, but in very aspirational, quote, middle-class homes, doing equally as well as white middle-class kids. It's class is the most important thing. It really is.
Well, it is, but then, as Sir Brian has said, you know, he points out the fact that Stormzy, the grime star, established Cambridge University scholarships exclusively for black British students. I don't remember anybody at the time saying, how do you define black?
That's an interesting one. You know what? I went to the trouble this morning when I heard this story to look up the application details for that scholarship.
Right.
And actually, it's very wide-ranging. It's not black. It's black, mixed, black, other, anything with a bit of black in it. It's quite a wide-ranging ethnic description. Again, though...
Isn't it? I mean, you still have... Nobody asked the question, is my point.
That's a fair point as well. Again, I get so twitchy. You know, this reminds me of South Africa and the times of apartheid.
Does it?
And, you know, these fine gradations of racial background. I'm very twitchy about it.
Well, you're the one that brought it up, Roger. You're the one that said, how do you define white? I didn't.
I know, but the point, my basic point is that I think it's class rather than race that's the most important thing here. And therefore, I would prefer all such scholarships to be about your disadvantage economically and socially rather than your ethnic background. That's my basic...
OK, no, I agree totally with you on that. And so if you had been at Cambridge University and Stormzy had come to you with this proposal, would you have said to him, why don't you just make it available to everybody?
I'd have said I'm much more interested in the socio-economic background, the causes that brings a disadvantage than ethnicity.
Yeah, but doesn't this also bring us back, Roger, to the whole problem of what you might call positive discrimination? That whenever you positively discriminate in favour of one particular group of people, then by the very nature of that, you're positively discriminating against another group.
Yes, potentially, although you can get round that by expanding the number of overall places available, can't you? It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, there has to presumably be some kind of ceiling on it, otherwise you're just paying for everybody to go to university and there's no point in anyone going.
Yes, you're right. There has to be a common-sense limit to these things, but I think there is scope for, in particular, it's not so much going to university in general, because I think, in the main, most people who are capable of going to university are able to go to university now. You might want to argue about fees and loans and so on and so forth, but actually, most people who are capable of going to university do go to university now in the UK. But I think when you're talking about the elite institutions, the Stormzy Cambridge example, it is possible to expand the number of places to ensure that you get a more equal representation and are helping those people from disadvantaged socioeconomic, I stress that again, background.
Well, given some of the things that have been going on in Cambridge University recently, I'm not sure it's altogether the place to send somebody if you want to give them an all-round education anyway, because it only teaches the stuff that they think you should be learning. What about what Trevor Phillips had to say? He's basically calling this a lethal cocktail of inverted snobbery, racial victimhood and liberal guilt, because these schools don't want to help white boys. Now, he's not a guy that you would imagine would be on the wrong side of an apartheid conversation.
No, although he has had his own strong views on a range of these areas, he's not necessarily, the only mouthpiece of that community and that point of view.
Yeah, but he's former chairman of the Equality and Human Rights Commission.
Yeah, no, that's true. He's got pedigree. I agree. But I suppose I come back to my really basic point here that I would hope those elite institutions, in this case, the Winchester and Dulwich Colleges of this world, would be looking to help all disadvantaged students from disadvantaged socioeconomic backgrounds. So I can just about understand their reluctance to want to pin it down onto a particular ethnicity. But I would say I would want that across the board, but it would apply in the Stormzy case as well as this case.
Yeah, but it doesn't, and that's why it's a story, Roger, because it's not being done equally, and it's not being done in a balanced way. So effectively, we've got a situation where Trevor Phillips appears to be right until somebody can prove him wrong.
You could argue that, because you're right, we've got two different sets of criteria here, and I don't think different sets of criteria are a good idea in education in general. It can create feelings of distrust and unfairness, and that's not good for the system as a whole. So I'll keep repeating it. It's about class. It's about your socioeconomic background, most of all. And if you think about it, class is probably the one thing that is least dealt with across all aspects of society. Still, not just education, is it? Access to elite professions. There's been a lot of work done to improve the representation of ethnic minorities in elite professions. Not much done to improve the representation of people from working class backgrounds.
Yeah. I mean, I think you and I can both agree, Roger, that white working class kids are severely disadvantaged now in this country. So Brian Thwaites even says that it's a severe national problem, the underperforming of white young men in schools. I mean, it's a problem, but nobody seems to be addressing it.
It is a problem. I think it is being addressed, but it's being addressed, I suppose you could say, in a much more tedious way than national programs. It's been addressed school by school by school. So I'll give you an example of one of our highest performing schools in our group of schools, called Riverside School in Barking Dagenham. And they perform superbly well with white working class kids and working class kids in general. In fact, the working class kids in that school outperform the non-working class kids.
And how do you measure that? Do you measure that in the GCSE results or what?
In GCSE results, yeah.
But what happens to them after that?
They do very well. They move on to A levels. They go on to university. So they're doing incredibly well. So it can be done, and that's about very high quality education day in day out, which benefits students whatever their background.
Sure. And I mean, you're running this place. Sorry, Roger. It's one of your skills. So tell us how you're making that work. How are you doing? What can you show other people as to how to make that work?
Okay, incredibly strong discipline. So, for instance, the students are not allowed to talk when they move from lesson to lesson.
Okay. I'm liking it already.
Yeah. very, very high quality teaching with a huge investment in continual improvement in classroom practice so that those teachers every day are considering how they could have taught that lesson better next time. A very strong academic traditional curriculum. So the vast majority of students in the school study what's known as the English Baccalaureate, which are the traditional academic subjects. So that's the recipe, basically.
Yeah, and that's obviously been going for a while now, so you're seeing the sort of benefit of that. What about higher education and moving those kids into higher education, into universities, if that's where they want to go?
Yeah, only just started with that school because that was a new school that started 7 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so they're just getting into university applications now. However, I could take another well-established school, an Ofsted Outstanding School in our trust, Sydney Russell. They do extremely well in getting students into Russell Group University. So it can be done, and we're talking about, you know, what are very solid working-class communities over there in East London. And it can be done with students from extremely disadvantaged backgrounds. You've just got to work very hard. But the basics, really.
So if Sir Brian Thwaites came to you with this money and said, well, Dulwich don't want it, Winchester don't want it, do you want it?
I'd have it if it was about helping our disadvantaged students get to where they need to be. Yes, I would.
Well, what would you say
Not if it was only for white students.
What about the question of how many disadvantaged students there are? Say, for example, in that school you've mentioned in Barking, what's the percentage of disadvantaged students?
Oh, by the official measure, about 50% from memory.
All right. And how well do the other 50% do?
They do well as well. But it's not that they're underperforming, but they both do very well. It's one of the highest performing top 5% schools in the country.
Right.
So they all do well. I think it's about everybody moving up together, really. I suppose that would be my final message.
Well, it is about everybody moving up together, but it's also about realising that everybody has different talents and different abilities, and everybody's not going to end up with the same result.
No, and it's not that we say that everybody has to follow a pure traditional academic route. There are some students who follow vocational routes, have a chance to go to spend some of their time at local FE college. So you're right, it's about horses for courses and people, you know, utilising, you know, the best aspects of their talents. But it is in the main about providing high quality education day in, day out. That's what really overcomes disadvantage, whatever the form of the disadvantage.
Right. And in your sort of analysis of disadvantage, is it mostly financial? What is it exactly?
I can only use financial because that's the official definition. It's about household income. But I personally would say there's a whole range of other possible disadvantages, aren't there? Are the sort of things we talked about earlier about, you know, are you in a home that's got books? Are you in a home where you're given support and love but discipline as well? Are you in a home where there's aspiration to do well and a sense of belief that you can do well, that if you work hard, you will be rewarded eventually?
And that starts to get tricky, though, doesn't it? Because you're starting to peer behind the old net curtains to see what's going on in somebody's house.
Exactly.
Not everyone's keen on that.
No. So, you have to take the official measure in order to, you know, to work out how well you're doing. And I suppose, you know, we've just struck upon another problem with this whole area that we've been talking about, is these broad brush definitions, whether they're your income or your ethnicity, they don't reveal the reality of your individual existence, do they? And whether you know, there are other huge disadvantages that you're trying hard to overcome.
So
a minefield.
Fascinating stuff. Roger, as ever, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. Roger Layton there, Chief Executive of Partnership Learning, an academy trust that oversees 9 schools, including that one in Barking that he was talking about, where there's an awful lot of disadvantaged people who do very well. He says also an awful lot of disadvantaged young white boys who are doing better than they would otherwise be doing. Now, according to this story today, Sir Brian Thwaites, who's a professor, wants to give over £1 million for poor white boys to do scholarships at 2 leading private schools in this country, Dulwich College, Winchester College. Now, as far as he's concerned, the white middle, white working class boy problem is the biggest problem facing our society educationally as we speak. I'm sure you'd agree with that. Roger says it's not about whether you're white or black, it's about class. I don't agree with him. I think people who are white in this country and working class are not getting the kind of help and the kind of opportunity that lots of other groups of young men and young women are getting. So I want to hear from you on this, 0344 499 1000. I've been away for a week. I need to hear some of your voices, some of the common sense from you. I'm disappointed to get this from Nick, who says, really, Mike, there is no point paying for everyone to go to university? Why not? Surely collective intelligence in this world is more important than individual intelligence. Oh, are you advocating only those that can afford can have? Nick, you fall into the trap. You think that only people who go to university are intelligent. There's an awful lot of thick people who go to university. Look at Julian Moran. He's a QC. He's a barrister. He's been to law school. He's been to university. He's been all over the world. And yet, he's still a complete idiot. Do you see what I'm saying? 0344 499 1000. Get on the phone now. This is Talk Radio.
We are Talk Radio.
Now, you know how I feel about lawyers, right? Luckily, they're not all like Julian Moran. They don't go around clubbing foxes to death, innocent or otherwise. But there's a company called Slater and Gordon who are currently involved in a landmark case, they say, about ethical veganism, because there's a guy who has been dismissed from his job, supposedly, at the League Against Cruel Sports, because he revealed some information which was personal and private to the company. He said he did it because he was an ethical vegan. That's kind of complicated. We're not necessarily getting into the ins and outs of that. But what Slater and Gordon have said is that ethical veganism is a philosophical belief held by a significant portion of the population in the UK and around the world. And what basically the guy in question, whose name is Jordi Casamigiana, is taking is he wants to know whether he can have his rights protected because there may be vegan phobia at large in the public eye. Let's talk to Dominika Piasecka from the Vegan Society. Dominika, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Is there such a thing as vegan phobia, do you think?
It's an interesting term. I mean, obviously, veganism is about non-human animals who we fight for, so it's not really about vegans themselves being oppressed. It is animals who are being oppressed, and it is animals who we are taking a stance for by being vegan.
Yeah.
But having said that, there is a certain level of prejudice, I would say, against vegans. People feel defensive, maybe, about their own food choices as soon as they meet a vegan. So that can definitely be a thing.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I asked the question, of course, is because in order to set a landmark kind of ruling, I suppose, and a legal precedent, you need to say that there is such a thing as ethical veganism. And I'm not sure I agree with Slater. I mean, I'm quite happy for this guy to have as many beliefs as he wants to have. But the problem for me is that when you say things like the law firm say a significant portion of the population in the UK are ethical vegans, I'm not sure what proportion they're talking about, what that number is. I wouldn't expect you to know, but I mean, veganism is still a minority interest here, isn't it?
It is. But we did actually do some research at the Vegan Society this year, and we found that 600,000 people in Great Britain are vegans right now. So that's just over 1% of the population. So it is still quite a small number, like you say, but it is growing. You know, many people are raising their children vegan as well, and more people are eating vegan foods and coming to veganism for
all
the
time. You can't use the word normal, I'm afraid. That's not allowed on this show because we don't know what that means. You know, normal is a pejorative. But when you say 600,000 people, do you mean also those who sometimes eat vegan food rather than all the time?
No, so those are people on a vegan diet, but obviously veganism is a lifestyle choice, so we don't know if all those people, for example, avoid things like leather or cosmetics tested on animals, which is the key distinction in this court case. So Jordi claims that
this guy doesn't, in addition to what he doesn't eat, he doesn't wear leather, doesn't wear silk, doesn't wear wool, he doesn't use any products developed through animal testing, refuses to visit zoos or aquariums, does not buy products that use captive animals in their advertising, and would only date other vegans. He sounds a bit obsessive to me, to be honest.
But everything else, that's exactly what an ethical vegan is. So
I mean, is it any wonder that people...
in areas of life.
Is it any wonder that people seeing someone like him would not react in such a way as to be described as vegan phobic? Because they might say, well, actually, you're not very tolerant, mate. You know, why don't you talk to people who eat meat? Why don't you hang out with people that eat meat? Why don't you occasionally even date one?
Oh, no, I think he does because he did work with a lot of meat eaters in the company that he worked for. It's just a case of being allowed to express your belief that animals shouldn't be used for any purpose, which is what we are doing. You know, I am a vegan myself, obviously, and I hang out with a lot of meat eaters. Right. My entire family are meat eaters, in fact. So
okay. Do you travel by bus?
Yes.
Because he doesn't want them to squash insects.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think he does take it a bit far.
I think he does.
Vegans,
I mean, listen,
we don't.
I'm a very tolerant man here, Dominique, and I'm not going to make fun of your eating habits because you're entitled to do whatever you want. But I think we all have to be slightly more tolerant of each other if we are to continue living in the same space, don't we?
No, I absolutely agree. And this is like a case, a court case about tolerance, after all. It is just to allow vegans to make ethical choices in terms of pension funds, which is where the company allegedly went wrong.
Yes.
So it is not about imposing anything on other people. It's just about allowing vegans to express their beliefs that animals shouldn't be used for any reason.
I mean, you might say that he shouldn't have been working for the League for Cruel Sports if they, in fact, had pension investments that he didn't agree with.
I think that emerged after his employment. So there are lots of vegans and vegetarians working for the league, and obviously it is something that they're fighting for. It is a vegan cause. So I guess he just expected the pension funds to be vegan as well.
And do you not get the sense that this is a bit of a fad? I mean, if there's 600,000 people now, I'm not sure that number is going to increase on a yearly, annual basis, because I think at the moment lots of people are kind of into it, but maybe next year they won't be.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think a lot of people are eating vegan just because they're curious about it, but there's nothing wrong in that, because we are seeing a huge increase in the number of ethical vegans as well, because people are realizing we have so many amazing alternatives out there. So there's really no need to use animals in any way when we don't have to, for health reasons, for ethical reasons, for environmental reasons. And we can be healthy and happy on a vegan diet as well. So there's no need whatsoever to use animals anymore.
Do you think it's a bit unfair, though, when some aspects of veganism will be slightly more, shall we say, militant? Because one of the jokes that we always tell is that, you know, why did the vegan cross the road to tell somebody he was a vegan? You know, they're always doing that rather than, you know, I don't go up to people and tell them I eat meat. I don't go up to people and tell them how to behave.
Yeah.
You know?
No, well, I think it's a bit unfair, because veganism is a substantial part of my life. And, you know, whenever there's a conversation around food, obviously it's going to come out, the fact that I'm vegan. So even people who don't know me very well, they might know my dietary preferences or my lifestyle beliefs. So there's a substantial part of your life, so it will emerge.
Of course, but there's nothing wrong with telling people. I'm not saying you shouldn't tell people. It's not a secret. It's just that many people are much less polite about it than you are, Dominique. They're very much more overbearing about it.
Yeah, and I can only apologise on behalf of those people. You know, as the Vegan Society, we always promote veganism in a positive and open-minded way. We know we can't force people to be vegan. If we could, we would by now, trust me. But obviously, it's just different people. Vegans come in all shapes and sizes.
Sure.
They can be nice, they can not be nice. But, you know, on the majority of people I've met who are vegan, they are tolerant and nice people. So hopefully you will meet some of them in life as well.
Well, listen, Dominique, delightful to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Dominique Piasecki, the acceptable face of the Vegan Society, you'd have to say there. Andre was keen to jump in there, but I was going to let you monster her.
No, because the thing is, I'm increasingly of the view that these people get sort of let down by absolute nutbags.
Yes.
Because I had a friend of mine, and he makes vegan burgers for a living.
Yeah.
Now, I've publicly said I quite like his vegan burgers, and people are going, you eat meat and vegan burgers, you can't do that.
Why
well,
not?
Yes, you can.
Well, you can do everything you like.
I'm what's called an omnivore.
Yes.
Right.
Funnily enough, I had an experience. I was on the way up to Scotland, we stopped at one of those service stops, and I thought, I'm not going to have McDonald's every time we stop. So I went to Leon, and I saw they had a burger, and they had two, a chicken burger and a burger, and I said, I'll have the burger. And she went, it's vegan. I went, OK, I'll have the chicken burger then. So I didn't have the vegan burger.
Yeah.
But I might as easily, if I'd been in a different mood, had one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've tasted vegan burgers. And I mean, you and I have both been at an Indian, a Bangladeshi Caterers Association night, which was very much enjoyable. You're very well in with many of the Indian restaurants out in Berkshire, but also in London.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, many of our Indian friends are vegetarians.
Yeah, that's
so
absolutely
they never
right.
come into you and go, you can't have, meat.
I think one of the big difficulties that vegan organisations have is because these people are going far too far. And I'd make a couple of points. I mean, my friend who sells burgers, people wanted him to ban people wearing leather in his burger.
You see, that's ridiculous.
I mean, you know, and he said, I can't put up a sign saying, don't come in if you wear fur or leather,
right?
Because fundamentally, it's got to be a welcoming environment.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you the other thing that worries me, and it's the extension of the kind of offence culture. Now, as it happens, I'm self-employed, so I don't have a job that has a pension. But if my pension decisions were being made based on one person at the organisation objecting, saying, well, we can't invest in this, we can't invest in that, and you end up with these very, very poor investments, and I end up living in starvation in my old age because we didn't want to offend Bertie the vegan, then I'd be pretty upset
about
also,
it. Also, you know, not every organisation can be run as some kind of people's collective. You know, I mean, I used to run a radio station in Scotland, and the girlfriend of a guy that I fired came into my office one day and said, why have you fired him? And I said, what's he going to do with you? She said, well, he's my boyfriend. I said, well, I'm sorry. You know, this is not a democratic organisation. Yeah. I'm the boss. He's an idiot. I fired him. Get out of the office before I fire you. Now, of course, there are those who would say you can't talk to people like that in this day and age, but in that day and age, you could. And the bottom line for me is that you have to have tolerance. You can't expect people to be tolerant of you if you're not tolerant of them. Yeah. You know, the BBC, as we were just hearing, are now going to have this kind of, you know, calming influence programming going on Radio 4 to try and bring the country back together.
I'm intolerant of people who want to say you can't invest in Unilever because it tests on animals.
Right.
I'm intolerant of them because fundamentally Unilever is a good company that makes an awful lot of money.
Yeah, exactly right. And I mean, at the end of the day, whether you have a belief system which allows you to operate within the Western world or the Eastern world or whatever world you want to inhabit, and if it doesn't, you just go and live in a cave.
And also, a lot of these things are quite complex because, as an example, the Unilever example is interesting. They don't like testing on animals, but in order to sell in China, you're required to.
Right.
So similarly, I remember when I worked in local government and the landfill tax came in from the European Union, we were all required to collect up all of our plastic and send it for recycling. Well, nobody sent it for recycling. What we did was we gave it to Chinese or Indian companies who claimed they were going to recycle it and then threw it all in the sea.
Or set fire to it.
Threw it all in the sea, hence your plastic mountain. And so consequently, when people were saying recycling in Britain has increased, no, it hasn't. The amount of recycling we've collected has increased and it's all been tipped in the sea.
Yeah, absolutely right. Andre Walker here, Talking Sense. We'll take some more calls from you as well, Talking Sense. 0344 499 1000. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We are back on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, you might be forgiven to think that we've all gone absolutely stark, staring, bonkers mad. And when you see stories like this one, you do wonder whether the collective sort of psyche of this nation has gone rather over the edge. And this is when we got the news yesterday that National Park boss Richard Leaf said that the Lake District basically has to change in order to merit continued public funding. He says he wants to attract a greater diversity of visitors amid concerns that swathes of our population feel excluded. Now, let's talk to Charlie Shepherd from the Ramblers Association up there and see if he agrees. Charlie, very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, I mean, I just drove through the Lake District, funnily enough, albeit on the M6. I went up to Scotland for Christmas, came back as well. It's one of my favourite parts of the journey when you sort of, you know, sashay your way through all of those beautiful hills and inevitably there's a little bit of rain, a bit of cloud, a bit of sunshine. You can see some of those, you know, wind farms as well. It's a beautiful part of the world. I can't see what's wrong.
I think that Richard Leaf has some validity in what he's saying, in that if you do walk around the Lake District, I'm a local here,
right,
you do see a very much a predominance of white English people.
Right. Well, that's because we're in England, right? Presumably.
Yes, but also, I mean, that has changed in the last 10 years. There are a lot more BMI people about, whether they're foreign tourists or British, I don't know. But there are that there's a good case for improving access, particularly for people with physical and mental disabilities, because some of the areas are very restricted for that sort of for people who can't just get up and walk.
Yes, but I mean, that's the nature of the beast, isn't it? I mean, it depends on where you go in the country. I mean, I was up in Ayrshire, on the Ayrshire coast. It's not a very diverse part of the world. Most of the people there are white and Scottish. It just so happens to be the case. If you go to Glasgow, it's a little bit more ethnically diverse, but Scotland as a whole, and the Cairngorms, for example, is very unlikely to be a place where you will meet lots of different people from inner cities, because they just don't go there.
Yeah, so there is that, but I'm more concerned about the people with disabilities, and I know that's the wrong word to use nowadays, but...
You have to be very careful, right? So you want to talk about people with disabilities, but you can't call them people with disabilities.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the correct word nowadays is for this, but, I mean, a lot of the guest house and service providers could do a much better job quite easily by communicating better. But one of the other things in Richard Leaf's comments was comments about the asphalting of a footpath,
yeah,
which we as the Ramblers have already objected to.
Right.
But this is it's not exactly a footpath through woodlands. It's the old track of a railway, which has been reinstated after severe damage in Storm Desmond.
Yes.
And it had a perfectly good hardcore-type track base before, which you met all sorts of wheelchairs, pushchairs, etc.
Right.
But now they say that to be fully diverse, they want to put in asphalt, which we consider totally inappropriate.
Yeah. And this is the problem, isn't it, Charlie? Because what we have here, perhaps, and I think you're doing a good job of trying to explain it, is somebody trying to say something, but then getting it completely wrong. Because on the one hand, you can say, well, wouldn't it be nice if it was more sort of accessible to people in wheelchairs? However, you know, some things are not accessible to people in wheelchairs, and you can't make everything accessible to people in wheelchairs. You can certainly make hotels accessible. You should have public houses that are accessible. You should have toilets that are accessible. But you can't make the entire Lake District accessible to people in wheelchairs.
No, you could improve public transport.
Yeah, but that wouldn't make any difference if when they get out of the bus, though, Charlie, they can't go anywhere.
Well, I mean, I think there are things we could do, but one of the things we have to remember, and I think that, is that the Lake District is a unique landscape formed by nature and mankind, and that's what the World Heritage Site voted for.
Right.
And we must be very careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, exactly. And I'm not sure you can even say that anymore, to be honest, because you might offend somebody with a baby. But you see what I'm saying? I mean, I jokingly said to somebody earlier, well, how would you make Mount Everest accessible for everybody? You can't do it. There are certain limitations about the way that the...
things we could do to improve it in certain areas, and we are doing that, making a lot of footpaths, particularly lowland around the lakes, style-free and having gates instead.
Yeah. But it's a bit like saying, can you not make the sea accessible for people who can't swim? Isn't it?
No, but I mean, I think that Richard Leaf has possibly done this on purpose to raise the profile of discussion, but there are things we could do and there are things we should do, but we shouldn't go berserk.
Well, what do you think you should be doing that you're not doing?
We should be, we are doing it, but possibly not fast enough. I mean, there are footpaths round the lakes which Ramblers and other voluntary organisations are putting money into funding to improve the surface so that wheelchairs and prams and things can use them. We're not talking about doing this on the high mountains.
No, but surely that would involve tarmacking then, wouldn't it?
No, hardcore. Perfectly good hardcore solutions. Compacted hardcore is what we use.
Okay, so that's basically, for the uninitiated, that's basically concrete, isn't it?
No, it doesn't look like that. It's more like compacted gravel.
Right, okay.
And, I mean, one of the other issues he put there is about 4x4s. Our argument there is that these tracks were never meant for regular traffic. They were meant for access.
Hmm.
And if you put a TRO, a traffic regulation order, in, you could have it with licensing arrangements for people taking people who are unable to walk there rather than those people who are unwilling to walk there.
Right. But that surely is opening in a whole can of worms, isn't it? Because you're then going to damage the land in a way that it was never meant to be damaged. Because
it's being damaged at the moment far more.
By what?
By these 4x4s.
Right.
What we, the Ramblers, want to do is to introduce some TROs, but the Lake District National Park Authority are totally against it.
Uh-huh.
And that is why there is talk of, Richard Leafy quoted, a possible judicial review against their decision.
Doesn't this all sound like a bit of nanny statery, though, that we could do without?
Yeah, Yes, but I'm very fond of the Lake District. I lived here all my life, and yeah. I don't want to see it wrecked. I also like to share it with other people.
Yeah. But what he's saying is you're not sharing it with enough people. So he wants more people to come, well, damaging it, surely damaging it even more.
Well, he wants to have his different people, and at the moment...
Well, you mean he doesn't want the people that come there now to come anymore?
Well, I don't think he's quite that strong. But what we...
Well, then you're going to get more people then, aren't you?
Yeah, but we could spread them out better. At the moment, the Lake District is very crowded in the honeypot areas.
Right.
But there are a lot of beautiful areas that don't see an awful lot of people. I can go walking at a weekend within the Lake District National Park and not see a soul.
Right. And that's one of the reasons you want to go somewhere like that, though, isn't it? You don't want to turn it into a sort of attraction that everybody can get to and that everybody has access to, because part of the attraction of it is that you can be solitary.
Yeah, but we also, I mean, the Ramblers themselves are looking very much at trying to increase the variety of our membership. We are rather that, almost what they said, the traditional word of pale, stale and male. But we aren't male, we're very much equal.
You're actually calling yourself pale, stale and male?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that that's what people say we people. Some people say we are.
Well, you've got Janet Street Porter. I mean, she's not male, is she?
No.
She is quite stale,
though. Or pale. Or quiet.
Well, I don't know about that. But, I mean, I just worry, Charlie, that we're in danger of wrapping ourselves up in knots here and getting to the point where we can't do anything without asking loads of other people if they'd like to come along.
Yeah, I understand entirely where you're going. Well, I think I'm possibly less extreme than the view you're presenting.
Yes, no, I think I'm sure you probably are, in the same way that you're less extreme than the view that was presented by Mr. Leaf. But, you know, surely the whole point of being British and being sensible is that you are somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think what Richard Leaf's doing is trying to, and I don't know him personally, but to increase his funding.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. And that's all public money, isn't it?
The national parks have had their funding slashed over the last 10 years.
Right.
It's almost the point where footpath maintenance is almost all done by volunteers.
Uh-huh.
You know, so he may have, he's a clever man, he may have method in his madness, but we in Ramblers will do our most best to make sure that some of the more extreme things do not happen.
Yes, well, I hope so, because we don't like extremes in this country.
And well, we're a walking and campaigning organisation. Yeah. We were very much behind the Right to Roam Act.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you like walking through people's gardens, don't you, if you've got the right to roam there?
I don't like walking through people's gardens because they have dogs.
Well, not everyone has a dog.
You know what I mean.
No, but Janet Street Porter likes walking through people's gardens, doesn't she? She makes a big thing of it.
I'm less extreme than that.
Yes, that's very good. Well, as long as you're less extreme than most people, Charlie, you'll do well. Thank you very much indeed. Charlie Shepherd there, chair of the Lake District area of Ramblers. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, you can't surely make everything available to everyone. For example, I'd quite like to drive a Ferrari, right? Now, it turns out I do drive quite a nice car, but I don't drive a Ferrari. You can't make it possible for everyone to drive a Ferrari. You can't make it possible for a very large person to get into a very small sports car. You can't make it possible for a child to drive an HGV. You know, there are things that some people can do and that other people can't do. I don't understand this obsession with making everything available to everyone all the time. I mean, you know... Have I gone mad? I don't think I have. 0344 499 1000. I've only been away a week. Look what's been going on. For God's sake, you better call me. This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Andre Walker's here with me. Sam Delaney's coming up in the next hour to talk about the year 2009. Now, everybody's looking at me when I said this as if I'd gone mad. I was like, well, why don't we look back 10 years? Because everybody's going to be doing the year end. Everybody's going to be doing the decade end. I thought, imagine what was going on in 2009, 10 years ago. How about this remark? He says, I spend a lot of time in the lakes as I live nearby. In the summer, it is swamped with Japanese tourists. Do they count towards diversity? Not that I care anyway. Well, I mean, the idea that the guy that runs the Lake District, which, Andre, you said you've come from not that far away from the Lake District. A friend of mine's from Keswick. In fact, he has a shop in New York. He's a butcher called Myers of Keswick, and he's very famous, sells to English rock stars, sells, you know, like sausages and meat pies to Keith Richards and Mick Jagger. And he's very much a Lake District man. But the idea that this guy's saying, oh, we've got to bring more people into the Lake District, we've got to tarmac over some places so that people can get access to wheelchairs and all the rest of it, I mean, it's mad, isn't it?
Well, isn't Keswick the town that decided to have effectively a kind of water park type thing?
Yes.
And they just discovered that their demographic was not particularly interested in that sort of thing. I mean, fundamentally, if you do not want to walk round hills and mountains, then the Lake District is really not for you.
It really isn't. And if you don't don't go to a place that's called the Lake District. Right. But let's talk to Gerard, who's in Crewe. He wants to talk about foxes. Hello, Gerard.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Andre. But the world's gone mad, hasn't it?
It really has. What have you got for us on the fox front?
Well, look, we keep chickens.
Right.
And we just ensure that they're secure, simple as that. And we get foxes visit us. And as soon as you open the door or show your face at the window, they're off.
Right.
My natural instinct is not to grab a baseball bat.
Well, of course not.
Well, I know this guy said it was trapped, but, I mean, I know my natural instinct would be to try and help the fox, not to kill it. But then again, that might sum up the character of the man we're talking about.
Well, quite. I mean, do you have a kimono by any chance, Gerard? Because he was dressed as in a kimono while he was doing it.
I'm up north, Mike. I don't know what a kimono is.
Well, I mean, here's an interesting one, right? A friend of mine keeps chickens, right?
I do wear my wife's underwear, but I mean, I'm not sure what a kimono is.
There's no need to admit to that on national radio. I have a friend who has chickens, and she lives just outside of Tunbridge Wells in Kent. One of her chickens was killed by a mink, right? Because apparently in that part of the world, there are loads of wild mink who were set free by, guess what? Animal rights activists many, many years ago. And these are some of the most dangerous and horrible creatures in the entire hemisphere.
We have them up here in this area as well. But look, to say, you won't get Julian Moran onto your programme because he's a character. He's a coward.
Yeah, he won't come on here. No, he's already blocked me on Twitter. There's no chance he's coming on here.
No, he's the sort of person who hides behind his legalese, and he'd only walk into your room if he actually had a baseball bat in his hand, and I still wouldn't fancy his chances.
I wouldn't fancy his chances either. I'd take it off him. I'd put it somewhere where he hadn't been for a while. But that's another story, Gerald. Thanks very much indeed. Let's talk to Craig, who's in Oxford. Hello, Craig.
Good morning, Mike. How are we?
Very well indeed. What can I do for you?
Yeah, well, I had a run-in with the chickens a couple of weeks ago. Sorry, a fox in our chicken coop a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
We don't keep a lot. We only have about, we had 9. A fox got in about 5 in the morning into our coop.
Okay.
2 weeks back, killed 3 of the chickens. 2 were dead. 1 was sort of wounded. It's kind of ripped open, effectively.
Hey.
And sort of 5 in the morning, we've gone out into the garden armed with a 6-iron and a carving knife, trying to get this fox that's in the coop. It's just killed half of our...
And how did he get in? Because don't you have covering over the top as well?
We did, yeah, but unfortunately, during a recent storm, a bit of the roof had cracked.
Oh, right.
And it got in through this crack in the roof.
Very cunning.
Yes, rather than digging under. So anyway, it scared it off, and obviously being awake then and quite sort of alert, I've got a rifle with a bit of a night vision set up.
A rifle?
Sort of waited. Well, you know,
not Rambo you're talking about here, is it?
No, not Vladimir. Not Vladimir the sniper.
No.
It's a small caliber with a bit of a night vision thing on it. It came back to try and collect his spoils, and
right.
I got a bit of retribution for the chickens.
He shot it.
It's the nature of the beast in the country, you know.
Yeah, but you're in the country. I mean, this guy's in Southwark, right? He's in South London.
Any let me say that any creatures that invade my house, now admittedly that's mainly spiders, I administer the death penalty.
Do you? It's bad luck to kill spiders, you
know? Is that right?
Yeah, you shouldn't kill spiders. Very bad luck. Also, they keep the flies away.
Well, I must admit, I had a problem with a couple of moths, and then I decided to not kill any spiders anymore.
Right.
So now that it's no longer a capital offence to be a spider in my house.
So, Craig, do you have a licence for your gun then?
No, it's a 22 air rifle, which is more than enough over the distance to take care of a fox.
Really? Okay, so it's an air rifle with a night vision sight.
Yes.
I wouldn't put it anywhere near the Royals when they come up there, because you might find yourself getting taken out by the protection squad.
No, it's very common in the country, and as I say, it's outside the M25. I mean, I'm guessing this MP was going after an urban fox that was in his bins.
Yeah, no, he has chickens, and I think he doesn't like people to tell where he lives, even though he's already written pieces about where he lives. But I believe he's in Southwark, which is not too distant from our office here at London Bridge. It's a local council which runs from sort of more or less Canary Wharf over to Waterloo, that sort of way.
Yeah, it is a conundrum, because as much as, you know, if a fox is in my coop, that's it. It's days are done for. I'm not a massive fan of fox hunting. I don't agree with that. It's a glorified sport. It's not a control method.
Yeah.
It's a bit of fun for the rich.
No, listen, your story, Craig, your story is entirely within the realms of what I would call normalcy. You know, however, if you'd said to me that you'd trapped the fox in a net of some kind, and then while it was in that net, you'd gone inside the house to find a baseball bat, brought it out, and then beat it to a pulp, I would say you were slightly deranged.
Well, normal's probably the nicest thing I've been called lately.
Well, there you are. You see, this is the nicest radio station you've ever listened to, Craig. Thanks very much indeed. It is extraordinary, isn't it? Andre Walker is here with us, that this fox story has elicited such a lot of different kind of... I suppose passions, because there are some people who think foxes are a pest. I see at least 7 or 8 foxes a week in London. I see one in my garden in Sussex, which is so beautiful. You wouldn't want to kill it. It's, yep. You know, fiery red colour, big bushy tail. The ones you see in London look like sort of slightly larger than rats.
Well, but this Jolyon, what is his name?
Jolyon Maugham.
Jolyon Maugham. Well, the thing is, he's the leader of the Nutters.
Yes, he is.
Right, and so consequently, people like me, who instinctively would say, well, look, you've got to do pest control.
Yeah.
If a fox attacks your chicken coop, then you have every right to kill it.
Yeah.
People like that, he's already annoyed us ages ago. Mm. All he's got left is the woke PC lefty brigade, and they all love foxes.
But the interesting
Therefore,
thing is,
he's managed to get everyone
He's
offside.
Managed to even really, all the people that used to crowdfund his various lawsuits against the government and to try and stop Brexit, they've all deserted him now.
Yeah, that's
they've
right.
gone, we are horrified to see that that's you right. are such a bloodthirsty, ghastly individual.
But there's a serious point here, isn't there? If what you dine out on is who can be the most offended by something, then in the end you will offend your audience.
Yes.
Because fundamentally, these are people who set out to be upset and offended by something. Like the guy you were talking about earlier, you know, he won't get on a bus in case it squashes an insect.
Right.
I mean, it's utterly ludicrous.
It is.
But if you are going to dine out on people like that, if you're going to empower people like that, then that gives you problems. But of course, there's a serious side to this. He is a man who has used his education and probably not inconsiderable intellect to give a voice to these absolute lunatics, and it's done significant harm to this country.
It has indeed.
So I'm glad he's upset.
One of the things I did say to James Max when I had a little handover with him this morning is one of the things that I enjoyed about my week away and my Christmas was that not one person that I encountered talked about Brexit. Not one person now talks about it because it's done. The game is over. We're leaving on January the 31st. What we do know is that there will not be a shortage of food. There will not be a shortage of medicine. There will not be a shortage of foxes or indeed baseball bats.
But it reminds me very much of when the Leave polled ahead in Scotland for the Scottish referendum. It was the day when the Remain voters, whatever they called themselves, were talking about how Scotland would pay extra for aftershave and perfume.
Yeah.
And the Scots bluntly were just offended by this ridiculous old nonsense.
I know.
Similarly, telling
Do you remember the guy that came on my show a couple of weeks before Christmas and said there was going to be a shortage of pigs in blankets? And I went, no, there isn't.
Oh,
and of course, there wasn't a shortage of pigs in blankets.
Ridiculous. When I was a student, I was part of a day when a group of us, for a laugh, and this went across the whole country, we decided that on one day we were going to panic buy carrots.
Right.
Just a bit of a student laugh.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? We managed to buy something like 14% more carrots than are normally sold in the UK. And you know what? The supermarkets just had it. They knew what was going on, when it was going on, and they just put extra carrots on the shelf. It did not dent them in any way. Now, normally you would have said, and I would have said, if 14% of British produce was stopped at the port of Dover, then we'd have problems. But of course, what people forget is, was it last year, 30 days the port of Dover was blocked because of disputes amongst the French?
Well, it's like all these people that said, oh, the M20, there's going to be lorries piled up on it all summer. I'm like, well, that's what it's like anyway.
Yeah,
it's already like that. Now,
right.
How about this? Before I ask you, I'm going to give you a second to think about this. I'm going to ask you for your top moment of 2019. But Graham from Bushy, first of all, says this. Have Andre Walker and Jamie Eastman in the same room at the same time, as they both sound the same.
Well, I normally,
Jamie East is not going to like that.
I normally get Justin Morehouse, you know, Potter's Tiger from Phoenix Nights. And who's the other one? Chris Moyles.
Oh, yes.
I get loads of those, unfortunately.
Okay. Now, tell us about your top moment of 2019, because you must have had one.
I don't want to be overly political, but the top moment
it
has
can
got
be,
to be.
It's all right.
It's got to be the stunning election result
to
Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
And if people are going to accuse me of being biased, let me tell you, if I was to have a second result, it would be Theresa the appeaser goes. Because this wasn't about Labour versus Conservative.
Mm.
This is about Brexit versus Remain, or democracy against anti-democracy.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.